This is a recording of Tony V. from Coos Bay, Oregon, taped at the 16th Annual Delta Intergroup Unity Day held in Ripon, California, on Saturday, February 6, 1993, in observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level. Please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all AA speakers.
We're going to get our main speaker meeting on. The man that will be doing this event, I've had the pleasure of meeting him once. Can I get some quiet in here, please? This is a speaker meeting, not romper room, please. I would like all of you to give your undivided attention to our speaker this evening, Tony V. of Coos Bay, Oregon.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Tony. I'm an alcoholic. And it's great to be here tonight. I'd like to say it's great to be here amongst friends tonight. There's a lot of people here tonight that I've had the opportunity to see that I haven't got to see in a long time. It's just really neat. I'd like to take a minute to thank the people who've made it possible for me to be here tonight. The committee, and most of them I don't know. I haven't even had the opportunity to meet tonight. But whoever they are, they know who they are, and I'm real grateful. I'm grateful that I could be here tonight to share. And when I got the phone call and asked if I would come down here to speak, you know, I thought it was kind of strange, you know, because I lived here for almost 15 years, and then I moved away and gone for a year and a half, and they called me up to ask me to come down and speak, and I thought that was pretty special, you know. And there's one thing I'd like to say before I start here, you know. I don't consider myself as a speaker, really. I consider myself as just another drunk trying to stay sober today and share with another alcoholic. And I have no great words of wisdom, but I have one thing, and I was talking to someone about that before I came up here tonight. I have my sobriety today, and I'm grateful for that. And I have that because of people like you in these rooms and a lot of other rooms that I've been through the years. And I want to thank you for that. You know, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me one thing. They said, when you speak at a meeting, you share a little bit of what you were like, what happened, and what you're like today. And you know, when I first came around, I used to say I drank too much, too long, and it got me in too many places where I didn't want to be. But then after I was here for a while, I found out I drank just enough, just long enough to get me here into Alcoholics Anonymous and teach me how to live. And that's just kind of neat, because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is to me today, is a way of life. You know, what I was like out there, it's probably no different from a lot of the stories you heard in here, so I don't have to go into a real long drunkalogue, but I drank booze. I became an alcoholic because I drank booze. You know, I hear a lot of people say, I became an alcoholic because this and that, another thing. I became an alcoholic because I drank alcohol, and I've done other things. And, you know, I don't today blame myself for anything, anybody else for my disease of alcoholism. I used to out there, you know, it was always the thing, I was a typical alcoholic, you know, that everybody else done this to me, you know. And like a lot of people in here, you know, they say, oh, I started off drinking at a certain age. I was 9 years old when I started into alcoholism, really. I didn't realize I was an alcoholic, but I liked what I'd done. And I didn't go out and get drunk my first time I drank, you know. But as the years went on, and it didn't take long, it taken its hold on me. And I had a lot of the alcoholic tendencies, I think, before I became an alcoholic, and I still have some of them today. You know, people think after you've been sober and clean for a while that you get rid of all these other things, but I found out that I still have them, and I still have to work on them today. You know, and that's what's neat about this program, because I have the opportunity to work on these things. But as I say, you know, to get on with things here, I started out drinking young. At the age of 14, I had developed a pattern of running. No, I can remember even before that, at 9 years old, I ran away from home because I didn't like the way things were at home. At 10 years old, I ran away from home again. I was living back on the East Coast then. I was brought up in New York. And at 12 years old, I ran away from home, big time that time, you know, and I hitchhiked all the way to California, you know, and my first experience in California. And that was the start of my life, you know, and I thought, you know. And I think that was when I really got my really first real taste of alcohol and really found out what it could do for me, you know. Because I remember riding out here to California with a guy in an old pickup truck. And I don't know whether he was alcoholic or not. It's not important today, you know, but we stopped somewhere along the road, and he says, well, I got to stop in here and get a bottle. And he says, you guys want a drink, you know? And like I said, I had a lot of the tendencies. And I said, yeah, you know, and I wanted to be the big shot. He handed me the bottle. I taken a big snort out of it, and my hair curled, my toenails curled, and I coughed and heaved a few times, you know, and hey, that's good stuff. Let's try it again, you know? And it didn't really take me long to run, you know. By the time I got into California, well, naturally I was broke, didn't have any money, you know, and was a good alcoholic dude, you know. When he's out on the streets, he goes panhandling, you know, and so that wasn't hard to do because I had just enough under my belt that it was easy to do. I'd get somebody to feel sorry for me, you know, hey, I need a dime or whatever for a cup of coffee at that time, you know. So that was pretty well when I started off, you know, but like I say, I didn't come into a full-blown alcoholic at that time, at least I don't think so. I didn't think I was. You know, and so consequently, what that was my pattern of running, though. I started my pattern of running as a young man. And I naturally was found out. I was sent back to New York, and I left home again. My patterns of running didn't stop. And then, you know, the next thing to do, you know, is being the rebellious person I was, which I think most of us as alcoholics are kind of rebellious, have that streak. I joined the Navy, you know, I thought, hey, that's the thing to do, you know, I'll be all right there, and that's an alcoholic's paradise, you know. And so I joined the Navy and stayed there for a short while. And, you know, at this time, you know, my idea there of being a man, you know, I'm a man, now I'm in the Navy, and I've got all these things, you know, go on, and I can drink, and I can do these things. So my next step was, what does every alcoholic do, you know? I mean, he has to go out and find himself a wife, naturally, you know. So, you know, about 17 years old, I lied about my age. I went and got married. I lied about my age to get in the Navy. Now I can lie about my age to get married, you know. So that was my next step in the disease, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And then, you know, there were some things happened there. And there was some tragedy came up in my life about that time, a few months after that, or a couple years after that, I should say. I left the Navy, and that's when I really got into alcoholism, into alcohol and other drugs. And it wasn't too long after that that alcohol started taking its hold on me. I ended up my first time in penitentiary in the state of California. And not having any idea that alcohol had anything to do with it. And, you know, I was talking to someone the other night before I came up here, you know, down here to speak, you know, and we were talking about this, you know, and we're talking about different things that happened. And I look back at those things now. And I laugh about it today, you know, because I remember when, at that time, when I went to court and I had a probational hearing and the probation officer came in and talked to the judge in the courtroom and he told the judge, he said, this man is not eligible for any type of parole or probation. He says, this man is a parasite to society, you know. And boy, you can't get any lower than that, you know, when they call you a parasite to society. So at least I had a title, you know, so that was all right, you know. So fortunately, or whatever, you know, but anyway, I went on, I'd done some time in prison over the situation. I came out of prison, I was out a short time, and my first thoughts were, you know, and some of you guys maybe out here have known about this, and some of you people have heard about it, you know, but you don't have much to do in jail a lot of times, you know, so you sit around and think about, hey, man, as soon as I get out of here, how long will I go get my first drink? And that's what I'd done, you know, I got out of there, and I couldn't wait to go get that first drink. And unfortunately, it took me back to penitentiary one more time. And then, you know, we talk about blaming people. So that was my thing then, you know. I started blaming all these people, what is happening to me. I was a victim of circumstances. All these people are picking on me. A poor little me. I came out of that penitentiary one more time, and you know, there was a thing there that I heard there in that penitentiary when I left. A man told me something there, and they told me the same thing when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said, man, what's going on here? There's a man there, he told me, he says, Tony, he says, when you leave here, he says, you better change your attitude. He says, if you don't change your attitude, he says, you'll be back. He told me that the first time I left there. He was there when I went back the second time. He told me the same thing again. And when I left there that last time, he looked at me and he says, Tony, he says, you better change your attitude. And he says, if you don't change your attitude this time, he says, next time he'll send you somewhere else. I looked at him and I said, there won't be a next time, you know, for how long I was. You know, it's like they told me when I came to the program, never see never. I came out, I was out a few months, and one more time, I had to go back one more time. It was a repeated thing. You know, and that last time that judge sent me back to the penitentiary, he looked at me and he told me, he says, Tony, he says, obviously you have a violent temper. He didn't say anything that I had may have a problem with alcohol or with drugs. He told me I had a violent temper. You know, and I could go along with that. I could buy into that. Yeah, I've got a violent temper, you know. I left that penitentiary. When he let me go from that penitentiary, he told me, he says, we'll revoke all parole or probation you may have. He said, provided you never appear in the state of California again for as much as a street fight, he says, because if you do, you'll go back to the rest of your time in prison. But you know, that wasn't the lesson either, you know, because I came out of that penitentiary and went back. The day that I got out of that penitentiary, I was two blocks away from the jail in Los Angeles. I was sitting back in a bar at noon. By 4 o'clock that afternoon, I was stoned again. I was on the waterfront of Los Angeles where I hung around. And I was back into the old thing again. And the old pattern of running started one more time. You know, while I go somewhere else, it'll be different. I went to another area. It was still the same. The disease progressed. And then it went on, and I, you know, wrecked the cars. I was in a bad car accident. It would be 2 years before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was almost killed. That didn't stop me. And I always like to think about what it says in those 12 steps, you know, in that second step, especially where it says, being restored to sanity, you know. I always say, I can't be restored to something that I never had. And here I am in a hospital, laid in a striker frame, paralyzed from my shoulders down, and I'm conning an orderly in to bring alcohol into me and set it in the thing next to me and drink the alcohol through a straw, you know. But I'm not insane, you know. And, you know, so naturally, you know, and my ventures out there, you know, every good alcoholic, he needs a little woman under his arm, you know. So this is me. I found me a good little woman, you know, and she was putting up with all my nonsense until one night I went home and I had a little bit more than I thought I had, and she found some things in my pocket she wasn't too happy with. The next day she kicked me out, and I looked around and I says, I dare you after all I have done for you. You know? And, you know, so she told me I had to leave. No, and I couldn't understand why she feel this way. No, I had no idea. But you know, I'm grateful for that same lady today, because that lady is the one who brought me to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. A few months later after that, you know, and I ended up one more time back on Skid Row, and some of you people know what places where I'm talking about. A little place in Southern California they call Venice. We used to call it the melting pot of the world, you know. In a two-block area, you had everything you wanted, you know. We used to call it the three B's, and I'll let you figure out what the three B's are, you know. But anyway, we had everything there that we wanted, you know. And I lived there on Wilbert Avenue in Venice, sucking on a wine jug. You know, and I was one of these alcoholics. I used to sit in a bar, you know. And it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we seek lower companionship. And after I got to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out I was a lower companion. You know? But I used to sit in these bars, you know, and I'd go in there, and I was one of these guys, you know, I'd get paid on Friday when I was still able to work. And I'd always send my clothes to the cleaners, you know, and I had my shirts washed and laundered and starched real nice, you know. And on Friday night I'd get off work, you know, and I'd go pick myself up out of the dry cleaners. I go to the shoe parlor, have my shoes polished, and I go into my little 2x4 hotel room, you know, and I put my tie on, I put my blazer on, and I go sit in one of these sleazy bars here, you know, I sit there, oh, but look at these guys here, how much better they are. I got my sleazy bars and look in that back mirror and look, and I ask myself many times, is this all there is to life? Is this where I'm going to end up? And I look at those little guys sitting under in a bar. And thank God, am I going to be like that? Is this all there is for me? I remember my last drunk, you know, and I was told something when I came here. It says, never forget your last drunk, because if you forget the last one, you may not have had it. I always remember something I read in an institution once, and I still hang on to it today. It says, a man who forgets his past is condemned to live it again. Yeah. And I always like to hold on to that, and I like to share that with other people today, because I read that when I was in an institution one time, and it fit real well for me in this program. Now, anyway, to get on with things here, you know, I remember my last drunk out there, and when I went back out, walking down that Windward Avenue in Venice, and thinking that I was so great, you know, my white shirt, my blazer, my slacks, my polished shoes. I looked down, my shoes were looked like I had worn them forever. My shoes, my pants, and my white shirt was no longer white. My pants was wrinkled. My blazer was crumbled. I hadn't shaved in a week. I don't know how long it had been since I had bathed last. And I remember this little guy there on Leonard Avenue, and I used to remember him real well. I still remember him today. I'm walking down the street on a Sunday afternoon, and he looked at me, and he says, Tony, the heat's on. He says, they're watching you. He says, they're going to bust you. He says, why don't you go to my room? He says, and take a shower and put on a clean shirt. He says, I've got a shirt there that'll fit you. This is the guys that I looked down on for so long. Now, when it talks about in the big book of that demoralization, and I had reached a point where that little wino had to pick me up out of the gutter to let me go home to take a shower and shave at his place and give me a shirt to put on. No, that's where I had gotten to. It wasn't too long after that that I made my first call to Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Southern California there. I'd like to tell you that I stayed sober at that very first meeting, but I didn't. And that was back in about 1961. And I walked in those rooms in Santa Monica, and I looked around, and there's people there. They're dressed nice. They're wearing nice clothes. They're driving nice cars and all these other things. And the only thing I heard them say is, if you want what we have. And with the good attitude that I had, being the type of alcoholic that I was, I looked around the room and said, yeah, if I have my hands in your pocket, I'll have what you've got. I sat there, you know, and this meeting was about ready to start, and I looked around and I said, I don't need this. I don't need these people. I can do this on my own. And consequently, I went back out there for another 2 years. Same thing over and over and over. One more time, found a little girl to play house with and all those things, you know, like I said. And then when it finally came to the point, you know, one day I'm sitting in that bar one more time on Skid Row there in Venice, looking in that back mirror, and the bartender's telling me, he says, Tony, he says, you're going to die. I knew I was going to die if I did quit. I knew I was going to die if I didn't quit. I didn't know which way to go, and I was at a point, and I'm sure that a lot of you out there have reached the same point, where I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober. I didn't know what to do. And knowing that there was warrants out for me, possibly, and a lot of other things, I went to the phone, I picked up the phone, and I called the police department. You know how a drunk is, you know, he's going to play real cool, it's going to be somebody else, not him, that was me, you know. So I'm standing on the phone talking to this cop, you know. I said, hey, what can you do with a guy who's drunk too much too long? I can't quit. The cop asked me, he says, is this guy in the street giving anybody any problem? I said, no. He says, is he in danger to himself? No. Is he in danger anybody else's life? I know. He says, there's not much that we can do. He says, the only thing we can recommend you do is you take him to the hospital. And just as I started to hang up the phone, the cop knew what I was talking about. Because he asked me, he said, who's the person you're talking about, yourself? And I said, yes. He says, maybe you better go to the hospital. I called this lady up, the one I was speaking of earlier. She asked me where I was, and I told her, she said, you stay where you're at, and I'll come and get you. I remember she came that Saturday afternoon, she picked me up, and she took me to the county hospital in Los Angeles. I got in there, and you know, and being the good alcoholic, you know, trying to con one more time, you know, well, hey, baby, you got to help me, and all this other stuff, you know, and I don't know whether she got in a hold of some Al-Anon somewhere along the way or what, you know, but we got to the hospital, and I asked her, I said, you going to wait to take me home? She says, hell no. She said, I've done what I was supposed to do. You do what you have to do. You know, she left. And so she left me there at the hospital, you know. And I said, boy, boy, what am I going to do now, you know? So I had to pull another con job, you know. I was a great con man. And so we got up there, you know, and the doctor, he gives me a shot. He gives me a couple of pills. And he said, well, that's all we can do for you, Tony. So now I'm going to try to con the doctor, see, you know. Well, hey, Doc, I don't have any place to go, you know. What am I going to do? I don't have any place to stay. And he looked at me and he said, well, Tony, we don't have places for guys like you. And at that time, they didn't have recovery programs and everything like they do now and detoxes and everything like that. And I'm glad they didn't. But he says, he looked at me and he says, Tony, he says, we have only one place for guys like you. And I said, yeah, where's that? You know, I'm ready to go for it. He says, over there in a psycho ward. Hey, wait a minute. I'm not crazy. I just drink too much. You know? And so anyway, I left that hospital that night. I went back to the hotel on Skid Row. And the next day, I called this lady back. And she told me, she says, Tony, the only thing I know for you to do is go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she says, I'll take you to the club in Santa Monica. She did. She picked me up. She took me back there. And that was my first time then, really, of making any effort to start to get sober. And I still remember that to this day because there was a man there and his wife, and they picked me up that night, and they told me, they says, you can come and stay with us for a few days. We'll help you get straightened up and, you know, and get you a place to stay and everything like that. And, you know, one more time, the good alcoholic thinking, you know, they're taking me home with me, and they were pouring this orange juice and honey down me, and I was sick, and I was shaking and scared, and I started hallucinating and all the other things, you know. And they were taking care of me, you know, and this is just what I wanted. I want somebody to take care of me. I want somebody to pat me on the back and tell me how great things are going to be, you know. Hey, I've got it made one more time. That was my thoughts. This was great until about the fourth day, and this guy told me, he says, tomorrow, Tony, he says, we're taking you someplace where you can go and stay for a while. He says, you can get yourself back on your feet. Oh, okay, great. At least I didn't have to go back out in the streets. You know, in these times that I was there, this guy and his wife, they were so nice, and they talked to me, you know, and they all these things, you know, and everything was great. That morning, we had to go from West L.A. to San Fernando Valley. There was a little place there, it's what they call a halfway house, and you had to be sponsored in by someone who was in the program. But I noticed all the way out there that morning, that guy didn't say nothing, you know. And so, naturally, my good alcoholic thinking started in right away, you know. What's the matter? Where's all this GLC he had? What's all these good things he was talking about? You know, what's happening here? You know, I'm getting real paranoid. He pulled up in front of his house, he looked at me. He says, Tony, he says, you want to stay sober, clean. He says, you go in here and you do what these people say. And he says, you want to drink and die. He says, you go out that door. And he says, you drink and you die. He says, that's what's going to happen to you. You're going to die out here in the streets. But he didn't say it in that quiet tone of voice, though, you know. And immediately, you know, the good attitude that I had, I started getting resentful. And he looked at me. And I started to get out of the car, and he looked at me and he says, wait a minute, son of a bitch. He says, I'm not through with you yet. And he proceeded to read the riot act to me, and I started to get out of the car one more time, a little bit more resentful. And he says, you have my phone number. He says, before you take your first drink or anything else, he says, you call me. But he says, after you've taken the first one, he says, you forget the hell you ever knew me. And by this time, I'm wondering, who in the hell do you think he's talking to? Then one more time, I started to get out of the car, and I reached for the car handle door, and he says, wait a minute, I'm not through with you yet. He reached in his pocket and handed me $2. He says, now, son of a bitch, he says, I want you to go in there and get a haircut. He said, when you get the hell out of here, I want my $2 back. And that was, you know, that was the end of the straw. But I went into that place, and those people, they kind of nursed me through some things for a couple of weeks, and I shook, and I puked. and I'd done all the other things, and I left there. I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I like to sit here today and tell you people, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and immediately I grabbed a hold of those steps, and I started working those steps, and I started doing all these things. But that's not true. That's not what I'd done. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat down in the chair in the back of the room. I got a cup of coffee and a donut, and that's where I sat. Because at that time in Alcoholics Anonymous, you used to go into meetings down in Southern California. They serve you coffee and donuts, you know, and I go in and get my coffee and donuts, and I sit in the back of the room, and I didn't participate in any way. Then people talk about working these steps. They say, you work those steps. I look at those steps. Those steps are fine for you, but I don't need them. As long as I don't drink or anything, I'm okay. I worked the first half of step one. I'd done that before I got here. I admitted that I was an alcoholic. But then after I was here for a while, I found out there's a little bit more to it. There's another part to it. I had to accept the fact that I'm an alcoholic. And I had to come to that fact, that I had to accept that I am an alcoholic. Among other things. It took me 5 years to get beyond that point. Now, I don't recommend that for anybody new in here. No. I come to these meetings and I became what's better known as a two-stepper, you know. Most people call it two-steppers. I call it a step and a half, you know. I was working the first half of step one and step 12, you know, and the only reason I was working step 12 is because I wanted everybody to look at Tony and see what a great job he's doing his program, you know. I go out there on these 12-step calls, I'm going to sober all these drunks up. And then a man finally told me one day, he says, Tony, he said, you don't carry the message, he said, you're carrying a mess. You know? And that was true. But you know, after about 5 years in this program, and things kind of fell apart in my life one more time. I didn't drink and I didn't use. But another guy I got acquainted with there in a group there in Los Angeles in the Burbank group. It's a pretty good sized group. I met this guy there. And he picked me up. He told me one day, he says, Tony, he says, maybe you better start working the steps. And I looked at him with my great attitude one more time and I said, I've worked these steps. And he looked at me and he says, Tony, you didn't have to work these steps or else you've missed some somewhere along the way. So maybe you better go back and try it again. And at that time I had to go to the hospital, physical illness. And he says, when you get out of the hospital, he says, I'll take you back to a 12-step house one more time. And I said, I don't need that 12-step house. I know what I'm doing. He says, no. He says, you need some help maybe. So he picked me up to the hospital when I got out of there and he gave me back to that 12-step house. And while I was there, I had to look at some things and come to the realization that I had never even worked any of those steps to any degree other than, like I say, the first step is step one. I had to start with step one more time, and I had to go through it thoroughly. Not only admitting that I was an alcoholic, I had to come to that point of realizing that my life is unmanageable. Then we went on to step two, you know, being restored to sanity. And like I still say today, I can't be restored to something that I never had. But I have enough sanity to know today that if I don't drink, if I don't fix, put any type of chemical in my body today, I have a chance for one more day. Then, you know, I went on to step three. Turning my will and life over to the care of God. And that was tough. That was real tough. Because when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as far as I was concerned, there was no God. And if there was a God, he wanted no part of me, and I sure as hell wanted no part of him. I used to hear people talk about prayer, you know, and I had a favorite prayer I used out there in the street all the time. God, give me out of this, and I'll never do it again, you know. That was the only thing I knew about prayer. I heard people talk about prayer and all those things, you know. It reminds me of when the very first meeting I came to an Alcoholics Anonymous. I always like to share this, you know, because it's kind of neat today after being on this program for a while, you know, because I come in a lot of meetings in different places and I see a lot of young people in there, you know, and some of them are new and some are relatively new. And it always takes me back to remind me of my very first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous, sitting there in Santa Monica in the very back of the room, sitting on my hands, shaking and scared and not knowing a whole lot was going on. And it was a speaker meeting that night also. And this little lady up there, she stood about this tall, you know, and she just barely see over the top of the podium. And completely gray hair, wearing glasses. And she stand up there and she was talking. And she talked about God, and I didn't want to hear that. She talked about clearing away the wreckage of your past, and I didn't want to hear that. And she's talking about all these things, you know, and she made a comment of how long she had been sober. And I thought in my mind, well, Jesus Christ, lady, if I was as old as you were, I'd have quit too, you know. And now I go into meetings today somewhere, you know, and these young people sitting there, they only look at, they don't know me, you know, and they look at me and they think, well, you old son of a bitch, you should have quit a long time ago, you know. And I'm sure that's what goes through a lot of them's minds, you know, but it's okay because it's been a few 24 hours. No. I always kind of like to share that with the people, you know, because that was kind of the way I thought when I came here. But you know, we've gone through these steps. We got into that third step, and it took me a long time to where I could get to a point to where I could believe in that higher power, that there was a God in my life. And you know, I like to share this with the people, especially the ones that are relatively new, and with what happened with me anyway. I don't know what happened with anybody else, and the only things I can say here tonight is what's happened with me. But I had to experience a lot of situations in my life in sobriety. I experienced a few today. But you know, I used to hear people say, well, you turn it over to God, and you pray about it, and you do these things. I didn't know how to pray, like I say. I didn't know how to turn anything over to God, and I had no God for a long time. And then, you know, slowly but surely, like a man told me in L.A. one time when I asked him how this thing worked, and he looked at me and he said, slow and gradual. We got into that third step, and I tried to work that thing. I tried to find a God or higher power or whatever it was. And there was a thing that I had to make believe for a long time, that there was something working in my life. But I always had a little bit of a doubt in the back of my mind. Is it going to work this next time? And something would come up in my life, and then the thoughts would come into my mind. If there's a God, is he really going to take care of the situation for me this time? No. I always had that doubt in the back of my mind. You know, and as time went on, this program, it grew a little bit stronger. Now, you know, like I say, I hear a lot of people talking in the program, I have all these problems. Today, I don't have problems. Today, I have situations. I have 12 steps to show me how to deal with them. And I had to experience a lot of situations in my sobriety. Any situation I went through, I grew a little bit stronger. No. But somewhere for a long, long time in this program, there's always a little doubt in the back of my mind. Is he going to work this next time? No. Then I had a little situation that came up a couple of years back. And, you know, I was told certain things. The first question I asked was, why me? And that was one of the things I was told not to bother to ask, but I came in here, just accept it. And the next question is, you know, is God going to help me through this? And that particular situation was the thing that made me grow probably stronger than anything else in this program, because today I know that God works in my life. I know that he's given me another day today. He gave me another day of sobriety. He gave me another day of life today. And for that I'm grateful for, you know. So I have no doubt in my mind today that there's a God out there, that he works. It says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, as God as we understand him. I mean, I don't understand him, but I know he understands me. And I know that he works in my life today. In fact, me being here tonight, you know, I feel is a miracle, and God has put me here tonight. He's made it possible. And, you know, it's kind of a funny situation, because he put me here for a couple of different reasons. One is, you know, we talk about in the big book some of the things that we have to do. And one of the things I had to do is make some amends. I felt that I had to make amends, some things that I had to do. And after moving from this area, you know, I didn't know if I was going to make it back here to do it. Sure enough, God works in strange and mysterious ways, but I got a phone call and said, you know, go to Stockton and speak. It's not only here to speak, it's here because I had to do some other things that the program tells me I have to do. And it was kind of neat. And two of those people are here tonight that I would be amends to, and I know who they are, and I've had the opportunity to make that tonight. That was kind of neat. Yeah. we talk about this program, how it works, you know. I can't stand up here tonight and tell you how it works for anybody else, but I know how it works for me. It tells us in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, we thoroughly followed our path. I like to stand up here tonight and tell you, yes, I work these steps every day to the best of my ability, but there's some days that I don't. There's a little thing in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous I always like to think about when it says, we rest on our laurels. To me, that means I sit on my ass. You know, and sometimes people think, well, you've got a few years around this program, you've got it together, you know. In the area where I live at now, you know, it's kind of neat. I heard a young lady second up here one night, she's telling her sponsor, she says, yeah, I've got it all together. Her sponsor says, yeah, and she says, you look around, you're standing right in the middle of it, too, you know. And that's what I think about every time I think about that I've got it all together, you know. And I know today that I don't have it all together by no means. But it's kind of neat to know today that I have a program that all I have to worry about is just today. And sometimes it's not easy. I came to this program, people say, oh, it's easy, it's easy. I found out it's not easy, it's simple. It's a simple program for complicated people. If you're anything like I was, I wanted to complicate everything I got a hold of. You still do today sometimes, you know? Then you know, after we get through that third step, there's another thing it talks about, and that's fourth step, you know? That inventory. And that was another tough one for me, you know. I had to sit down with that pencil and paper. And it talks about in the big book, it shows that rigorous honesty, you know. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no concept of what any kind of honesty was, let alone rigorous honesty, you know. Like I always say, you know, I was one of these guys out there in the street. If it wasn't nailed down, I carried away. And if I couldn't carry it away, I laid down alongside it and claim it, you know. Then they come in here and tell me about honesty, you know. It's this rigorous honesty, you know. It doesn't mean to me necessarily how honest I am with all you people. But it better mean how honest I am with me. And when I pick up that pencil and paper and I start to write, I better be real goddamn honest with things, because if I don't, I'm going to short myself. And I've been known to do that. You know, those steps, to me, I always like to think about, and I kind of cringe sometimes when I hear people say, oh, I've done my fourth step, I've done my fifth step, you know, like I never have to do it again. Well, for some of you people, maybe you don't have to. But for me, it's necessary to go back. It's necessary for me to go back and do those things again. I have to pick up that pencil and paper sometimes, and sometimes I don't like it. And sometimes I don't like what I see. No, but it's necessary for me to do those things today if I want to stay sober. If I want to remain comfortable, and that's something I didn't have when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, another one of the things I didn't have. I used to hear people talk about when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they say, oh, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm so happy, you know. I used to think, oh, wow, you know. So I thought I had to run around with a smile on my face all the time. And I found out if I do that, they'd lock me up in a giggle factory somewhere and let me pound my head on the wall, you know. And I don't run around with a smile on my face all the time. In fact, sometimes people tell me that I look like a goddamn little grump. Well, that's me. But I'm comfortable inside today. That's something I didn't know when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that there was any other way to live, and they said you live one day at a time. I had no concept of living one day at a time, but then when I got sober, clean for a while, I could look around. When I was sitting in that penitentiary, that's all they gave me was one day at a time. And also then all I had to do was start changing things around. You know, and that's what I like to think about too. It's for the new people, you know. It's not just coming in here and putting a plug in a jug. And come to the meetings, I hear people say, oh, all you have to do is just go to meetings and don't drink and everything will be okay. That might be all right for a while for you. It worked for me for a while. But you know, there's a guy in L.A., he used to tell me, you know, I'd walk into a meeting, I'd walk in that meeting, he'd look at me and he'd say, God damn, you're a miserable son of a bitch. What do you mean I'm miserable? He's like, look at your face and tell you miserable. He said, you don't like my face, sucker, stay out of my face, you know. And I was miserable because of the fact that I didn't do the things I was supposed to do. I didn't make any effort to try to work those steps. I didn't make any effort to make any changes in my life. Now, just like I said, I was a cheat, a thief, a liar when I came in here. I quit drinking, I quit using, I kept on stealing, and kept on cheating, and kept on lying, and kept on being uncomfortable and looking over my shoulder, you know. And I always like a little thing that a man told me one day at Alcoholics Anonymous about that, you know. I went to him and told him, you know, I said, hey, man, I'm getting mousted all the time, man, you know. And he looked at me and he says, Tony, he says, when you quit doing the things you're doing, he says, those things will quit happening. And I wasn't quite ready to quit doing some of those things, you know. And then he told me, he says, Tony, he says, anything that makes you uncomfortable in your life today, he says, put it all in one big bag and you call it alcoholism, and today you don't have to do it. As I went on through the years of my sobriety, that's what I have to do today when I find something in my life that's uncomfortable for me. I shove it in that one big bag, and today I don't have to do it. I don't have to be out there today carrying that 38 in my hand, a bottle in one pocket and a needle in the other, and wondering where in the hell my next fix is going to come from and my next drink. I don't have to wonder about where am I going to sleep tonight, where am I going to end up tomorrow. No. Those are some of the things that I don't have to do today, and it's kind of neat. We go on through those steps, you know, and I hear people talk, they get 3 or 3 months of sobriety in the program, you know, and I hear them talk sometimes, it kind of makes me cringe, you know, because they read a few pages out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they think they've got it made, and I hear people talk, especially in the area where I'm at now, and I heard someone the other night in the meeting say this, oh, I've got those promises in my life, you know. Well, I don't know where they're at in their steps, and it's not my business, but I know for me that I didn't find those promises in my life right away when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. It's taken me a long time before I found those promises. And then when I finally got into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and read what it actually said, you know, for me in the way that I interpret it, it says we find these promises when we've worked those steps. And when we've thoroughly worked that 9th step, then we will start finding some of those promises in our life. Today I have some of those promises in my life. I don't know what I'll have tomorrow. I've got some of those promises in my life today. You know, and I was one of these guys, you know, I always like to think about too, and a lot of you people have heard me say this before, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I thought when I got sober and straightened up, you know, I'm going to have all these things in my life. I used to sit in L.A. there, you know, when I was doing the meetings, and those old-timers would get up there, some of the people have been around for a while, I'd get up there quoting, you know, oh, I came down to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got a new car, and I got a new wife, and I got a new job. Wow, man. I want some of these things. And, you know, I was one of these guys, I was always going to the old-timers, you know, and I don't know what I was doing, but I went to the old-timer one night, and they always had an answer for you down there in L.A. Some of those old guys down there, some of those old bleeding deacons down there, been around for 2 years longer than God. You know, they had an answer for you. And I went to this one guy one night, and I asked him, I said, when I get these things you guys talk about? He looked at me and smiled. He said, when do you get off your ass and go to work? Wow. That wasn't in my vocabulary. That's a dirty four-letter word, work. But it's true, you know. If I want some of those things in my life, if I meant to have them, I'll have them. You know, today I don't have that new Cadillac or whatever. I don't have that beautiful little house on a hill with a white picket fence. I don't have all those things today. In fact, what I have today materially, you could probably put in the corner of your eye, it wouldn't hurt. I've got one thing today that nobody tonight can take away from me, and that's my sobriety. I've got people tonight who care about me. I've got friends tonight, something I didn't have when I came here. I've got a lot of friends sitting in this room out there tonight. I've got my self-respect today. Something I didn't have when I came here. I've got a God in my life today. Another thing I didn't have when I came here. I've got a roof over my head tonight. I've got 2 nickels in my pocket that I can call mine that I work for. And I've got that peace of mind that it talks about. I've got a lot of those promises that it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, what more can I ask for? You know, and I've had the opportunity, you know, to some of the people right here in this room tonight, it's kind of neat to be back here to see these people. Because God's given me the opportunity to put my hand out to some of these people and say, hey, there's another way to go if you want. And you know, I can't take credit for anybody's sobriety in here. There's a guy in L.A. that I know that I used to get really irritated with, and some of you people know who I'm talking about because somebody's been around to know. And I used to go to this meeting with this guy. He had a meeting on Saturday night, you know, and he used to say, these are my babies and I got them sober. But hell, I never got anybody sober. I couldn't even keep myself sober, for Christ's sake. How in the hell can I get anybody else sober? But I've had the opportunity to put my hand out to a few people here tonight and say, hey, there's another way to go. You know, we talk about the different things we have in life that we want to do. You know, when you start getting around to my age and the situations I have in my life today, we start to realize, you know, that there's not too much time left. You know, and that's all right. But you know, I put down some goals in my life. I used to hear people talk about goals and stuff in their life. And I always like to say I have 2 goals in my life today. One of them is when I go out of this world, I go out here sober and clean. The other one is when I walk out of this world, you know, I can look back and say, hey, maybe I've said one word that's helped another alcoholic stay sober today. And maybe in return, he'll pass that on to somebody else. No, I may never know, but my God will know. You know, I could sit here and go on and on about what this program has given me. It would take forever. I always like to sum that up real easy by saying everything I have in my life today, this program, is being due to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because of my sobriety. And you know, and sometimes when we get the thing about feeling sorry for ourselves and saying this and that and another thing, you know, even the things that don't look too bright in my life sometimes, I look at them and I know when I come out the other end that I'm going to have grown from it a little bit more. I've grown a little bit stronger, and just like I talked about earlier about some of the situations that are in my life today, I didn't like them. You know, people say, all you use is serenity prayer. All you have to do is say that serenity prayer, you know, and you're something another thing. You know, I wore that serenity prayer out, but I didn't realize what I was saying. It says we accept the thing we cannot change, you know. But it didn't tell me for a long time that I don't have to like some of those things. But I can accept them today, and the program has given me that knowledge to be able to accept a lot of things today. And you know, what's so neat today is I remember when I left California here to move away, and I was able to look back, and for one more time, I didn't have to run away when I left here. I had a couple of people ask me, said, Tony, what are you going for? So you're running away again? And I had to stop and look. I really wasn't running away from anything like I had before. And today is kind of a neat feeling, you know, when we talk about making those changes. I don't have to run today. I can walk away from situations today, but I don't have to run away. There's been a few situations in my sobriety that I've had to walk away from. These are just some of the many things that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. When we talk about learning and growing up, some of the things that I've learned here. And believe me, it didn't come easy. It didn't come overnight. It didn't come in a month or a year. It took me a long time. It took me a long time to get to where I'm at today. By the grace of God and by people like you in these rooms. A lot of rooms just like this. Come April the 11th, it'll be 30 years since it's been necessary for me to take a drink or put any other type of alternate chemical in my body. But there's one thing that I like to add to that is number one, as I said before, I owe that to you people and people like you and a lot of other rooms like that. You know, the people who kept these doors open for me when I came in here and people who kept the doors open in other places when I went there. There's a man the other night, I got the opportunity to watch him come to the program and get sober and get his first year. I told him the other night, and like they told me, the person belongs to you and the rest of them belongs to the program. You know. And then the one other thing that's most important to me and most of all those years don't really mean anything because all I've got is the day. I'm no different than any one of you other people out there tonight. Maybe you have one day or a month or whatever time you have. You know, we're all the same because all we have is just today and just right now. And that's some of the things that I hope that I never forget. You know, I can remember the man that I told you about that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and just before I left Los Angeles, this man had a lot of years in the program. And just 2 days before I left Los Angeles, I saw him in the same Alano Club where he picked me up, and one more time, he was drunk. He looked at me and he says, Tony, he says, you're the only guy I've ever worked with that's managed to stay sober. I looked at him and I says, yeah, and I says, I remember the things you told me when you brought me to this program, and I said, I hope I never forget them. I still remember a lot of those things today that he told me, and I hope that I never forget them. No. I don't know if he ever sobered up again or not, you know. But I know that man, he was the one, you know, who was probably a lot of help to me. And I don't know, I can't, you know, I really don't know what happened to him, but it was kind of sad. So, but it went back to show me just one more time, is all I have is today. And like I was always told when I was doing this program, he says, man told me, he says, we're all only one drink away from another drunk. And only one arm's length away from another drink. And there's a man that I've heard around here, and I always like what he's had to say, you know, his sponsor or somebody told him once. The longer we're around, the closer we are to our next drink. And I think about that frequently. You know. And you know, and I always like to get reminders. Last night coming down here, I came down on the train, and it's been a long time since I've ridden a train, and boy, last night, I had a lot of reminders. Because, you know, the way that it's been a long time, like I say, since I rode a train, and coming down here last night, you have one department to go eat, you know, and you have another department to go sit, look out the window, then you have a department to go smoke. So I went down, you know, I thought, well, I'll go down and have a cigarette because it's one of my addictions I haven't gotten rid of yet. And I went down there and sat there, had a cigarette, and the short time it takes to smoke a cigarette. Believe me, man, all these people around there, they're stoned. One guy, he was stoned when I got on the train. This is by 11 o'clock last night. He was so stoned, he's falling down their seat. And those were reminders to me, is to remind me, hey, I could be there. And this morning, before we pulled into their first stop here in Martinez, I went down to have another cigarette. The lady who was there last night, she was passed out in the same seat this morning. And then when we got off the train in Martinez, I saw these people, you know, I thought, oh, God, thank God I don't have to be there again. You know? And I could just hear some of them, you know, it reminded me of when I used to pull my head out of the ivory throne and say, I'll never do it again, you know, and then be back there the next night doing it all over, you know. And that's what it reminded me of this morning, you know. And those are kind of little things that I always like to think about, you know, those little reminders that I get. And I can remember one day sitting in a restaurant downtown Stockton here with a friend of mine in the program. We're sitting there having coffee, and I look out the window. There's a couple of three guys standing over there, you know, and it reminded me of, again, of myself. They finished off the Mickey, they threw the bottle away, and they were standing there giving it this pitch, you know. I looked back over there, and one of them was gone, you know. They're going to make the run, man. And then there was one guy sitting there, and the other guy sitting there, and one guy was going and giving it this pitch, you know. And I started laughing. My buddy asked me, he says, "What are you laughing at?" I said, "I can tell you what he's saying right now." And he said, "What's that?" "All these things I'm going to do tomorrow when I sober up." That was me. You know, there's so many things that go on in my life today that I can sit back and I can look at and I can see and think, thank God I don't have to be there again. I never have to be there again. I never have to sit back in that penitentiary one more time and point your finger at somebody else and say they done it to me. I don't have to be down there on that skid row one more time wondering where I'm going to get my next drink. I don't have to sleep in those bus stations or under those bridges and all those things. I don't have to be there today. You know, a man told me in Alcoholics Anonymous when I came here, he says, "You can be anything you want to do and do anything you want today if you're willing to pay the price." You know, and that covers a lot sometimes, because sometimes I have to look to see what the price tag may be. There are a lot of things out there sometimes I'd like to do, you know. And I have to look the price tag, you know. I may not want to pay that price. The price may be that I may have to drink one more time. And it's like walking in and getting a piece of furniture, you know. I go in, I look the price tag. If I can afford it, okay. If I can't, I better walk away. And there's a lot of things that go on in my life today, you know. Oh, I would like to do that. But can I look? What is the price I may have to pay? And I may not be able to afford it. You know, another thing I always like to think about, too, of what it talks about in the big book about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's something that I have to work on also for me today. It talks about in there, and I hear a lot of people say, you know, it talks about getting rid of our character defects and our shortcomings. I haven't gotten rid of all mine yet. There's a lot of them that are still there. And I have to work on those things. Every time I think they're gone, there's something happens and dingles as one pops back up again. Hey, I thought I got rid of it. There it is again. No. I like to sit up here tonight and say, "Oh yeah, I've gotten rid of all my character defects. I've gotten rid of all my shortcomings." No, wait. I haven't. One more time, the program tells me, you know. And I like what it says in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous when it says, "We are willing to grow along spiritual lines," you know. It always takes me back to remind me of a guy down in L.A. one time, one meeting where I went to, a guy came in, he had about 2 weeks of sobriety, he stood out in the men's tag meeting, he looked at me, he says, "I've worked all those steps, what do I do now?" And one of the old timers looked at him, he says, "Careful," he says, "the halo will fall down around your neck and choke you to death," you know. And, you know, that's me, you know, every time I think that I'm doing so great, you know, I better be careful. And every once in a while, you know, I get on this ego trip. You know, people talk about having egos and stuff like that. And every once in a while, my ego still gets out there, you know. And I like to say these things because sometimes people think, because, well, you've got a few years of sobriety, you know, these things don't happen. Don't kid yourself. They do happen. My ego gets out there, you know, and I think, oh, yeah, you know. And then invariably, somebody's going to come along and they're going to pop it for you. And it happens. It happens. Believe me, it's happened to me anyway. And like I say, I can only say for me, because I still get up on those kicks. I still get my ego out there. You know, just a little example here, the area where I live now. When I went there, it wasn't my destination. I got there and I thought, well, hey, I'm going to stay around here for a couple of months and see what it's like. I was going to go on to Washington. Well, I got there, and, you know, things started happening, and one thing happened after another, and unfortunately, you know, I'm still there, and one night I was talking with somebody in the program up there, you know, and I said, hell, I don't know why I'm here, I'm just here. This wasn't my destination. I was going on to Olympia, Washington. The guy says, well, he says, maybe God puts you here to help us, you know. And immediately what happened? My ego. Yeah, I'm here to help all these people, you know. And then one night after a meeting, we're sitting having coffee and I'm talking to somebody. And then it finally went through this thick head of mine. I'm not here to help anybody, for Christ's sake. I'm here to get help for me. One more time. This is what I say, my character defects and my things, you know, happen. And I get my ego out there in the way once in a while and all these things. And people, I say these things because sometimes people think, well, you've got all these years of sobriety, that don't happen. It's happened to me. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm talking just to myself tonight. So it reminds me that I still have a lot of work to do on me. You know, I used to sit in these rooms and take everybody else's inventory. No. Well, if this guy would do this, and if she'd do that, and if they quit doing this, you know. And the guy, you know, pointed me one up one night, he says, Tony, he says, quit taking everybody else's inventory and take yours. That's what I have to do today. I have to look at me. What anybody else does is not my business. This is what I do. And you know, and any time I start looking at someone else and thinking, why that so-and-so and this and that, another thing, like a guy pointed out to me one day, he says, hey, maybe I better take it around and turn it around and look at it myself. Maybe it's me I'm seeing. And sometimes I have to do that. So you see, folks, for me, I still have a long way to go. I'm still working. And all I have is today. I can work on it today and try to be a little better person today than what I was yesterday. I have a long way to go. It's like I always like to say, and a lot of you in this room have heard me say this before. You know, I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was like climbing a mountain. I had to put the spikes on my heels. I had to put the rope around my waist. I had to pick up that little pick and that hammer and all the things that the mountain climber climbs with. And I started climbing that mountain. And every once in a while I reach a plateau and I stop to rest. I look back to see where I came from. But I can't sit there too long. I have to pick up the tools and I have to start climbing one more time. And then every once in a while it seems like, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not making any progress. It kind of seems like maybe I'm going back. And somebody has gone on before me, they've got that rope around my waist and they gave me a little tug. And I said, it's okay, come on, let's go. And it gives me enough strength to try a little bit more. To go again. You know, I like to think, and I like to tell you people, you know, the way that I heard when I came in here, but to me it's not real. I thought that once I sobered up and cleaned up, that there'd never be any bad days in my life again. You'll have situations, as I said. We get sober, then reality sets in. It's like I often say, I came into the program doing 90 miles an hour. I slammed on my brakes and reality came in behind me at 90 miles an hour and slammed you right square in the butt. And it hurts sometimes. But you know what's so neat today, no matter how much is going on, it seems like there's always somebody there. You know, it's when they tell you pick up the phone, call somebody, get a hold of another alcoholic or whatever you have to do. And when I came in here, there's a little thing in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous I like to think about once in a while too, you know, it says, pride has to be smashed, you know. And I was too goddamn proud when I came in here to pick up that phone and say, hey, I need to talk. I didn't come in here and say, hey, I got not, my God, I hurt. Or I wouldn't want you to feel how I felt. I wasn't going to let you know that I hurt. I wasn't going to let you know that I had a knot in my gut. But when I hurt bad enough, it's just like I did with the drinking and the using. When I hurt enough, then I started doing the things that I was supposed to do. And if there's something wrong today, I can go to that phone and I can pick that phone up and say, I need to talk. I can get to a meeting and I can find somebody and say, hey, I need to talk. And I can pick up my big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And sometimes I can get something from that. I do whatever the hell I have to do today to stay sober. And it's not always easy. I do whatever I have to do today not to make myself uncomfortable, like running and doing all the other things anymore. I do what I have to do. You know, a little thing that I've heard in this program too, you know, is, like I say, I heard people talk about prayer when I came here. One of the greatest things that I've learned today, you know, is after I got sober and clean, you know, and like I say, when I was out there in the street, told God, get me out of here, so I'll never do it again. You know. And then when I got sober and clean, and people would say, if you need something, you ask God, you know, well, God, give me that new car, God, give me this, and God, give me that. And then finally when I got my nose stuck in a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me very plainly there one more time, we pray for His knowledge for us and the power to carry that out. And that's all I have to do today. I don't ask God for those material things. About 90% of them I don't need anyway. But you know, it's taken me a long time to reach this point. And I'm grateful that if the program is being to me the way that it has, and like I said earlier, I'd like to sit here tonight and say that I came to this program and I've worked a perfect program since I've been here, but that's a lot of nonsense. As it talks about in the big book, it says, we clear away the wreckage of our past. I cleared away my wreckage of my past when I got here, then I turned around and made some more and had to clear that away. And still making wreckage sometimes that I have to go back and clear up. Again, I'm only speaking for myself. I don't speak for anyone else here tonight. I try to be as honest as I know how with you people in these rooms tonight and what it's like with me today. And like I say, I don't run around today with a smile on my face all the time. Ha ha. But I'm comfortable today most of the time. I'm grateful for what I have in my life today. I'm grateful for the day of sobriety. I'm grateful for the fact that I had the opportunity to come back here and to see a lot of the people that I haven't seen in a long time. One more time now. And I'm also grateful for a few new people that I've met here tonight. I'm sure they're going to be very special in my life. As I said in the beginning, I'm not really a speaker, I'm just another alcoholic who's trying to stay sober today. And hoping that maybe I might say one word, it might help somebody out there tonight. Maybe I've helped no one out there tonight, but you sure as hell helped me. Before I wind it down tonight, there's one little thing that I like to say. You know, I used to like to do some writing and stuff like that once in a while, and still kind of dabble with it once in a while. And one night I was writing, and some of you people here have heard me say this before, but I kind of like to use it today. Like I was saying, I have my goals in my life today. You know, one goal is I go out here sober, clean. The other one is maybe I might say something that's going to help somebody. And what I'm doing here tonight is trying to share with another alcoholic. And it always reminds me of my bank account, you know. When I was out there in the streets, I'd taken from a lot of people. And I never put anything back. And then I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd taken some more, and I kept taking, and I kept taking. That's the way it was when I first came in, because I wouldn't share with anybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd sit in the back of that room, I'd drink my coffee and eat my donuts, like I said, and when the meeting was over, I'd be gone. I never shared with anyone else. And then one day, you know, I got my bank account, you know, and it says the account's run a little bit low, it's time to put a little bit back. So today, when I'm asked to do something in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to try to make some effort to put a little bit back. That's what I'm doing here tonight. Just trying to put back just a little bit of what I've taken off. I'll never put back in life what I've taken from it. I'll never put back into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous what I've taken from it. But tonight I've got the opportunity maybe to put back just a small portion, just a little bitty piece somewhere. And I hope that I have. That's my thing today. With that, a few more minutes. So I'm gonna knock it off here because, you know, so I would like to thank all you people one more time for allowing me to be here. And all the people that I haven't got to see in such a long time. And each and every one of you people who played a part in my life, you know. One more time I have to look at when people say, oh, you were such a help to me. But a lot of you people don't know what you've done for me. A lot of people I knew when I first moved to this area, and I haven't seen them in a long time, and I didn't need to see them tonight. God has let me be in your life one more time and put your life, you back in my life one more time for some reason. And I'm grateful for that. And for all the people here tonight that I may not know. And you don't know me, but I know about you, and you know about me. And there's one more thing before we go. I didn't bring my big book up here with me. Is there anybody out there who happens to have a big book handy with them? A little something that I'll always remember, like I said, my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that little old lady, I looked at her and I you know, I thought, my God, lady, if I was as old as you were, I'd have quit too. And at the end of that meeting that night, she read something from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And through the years, it's always stuck with me. And any time that I've ever been asked to share somewhere or speak or whatever, I've always liked to read this. And it's on 164 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, The Vision for You. And for some reason, it's always stuck with me through the years, and it was the only thing that I think I really heard in my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that night, that lady read that at the end of her pitch, and I'd like to do the same tonight. This last two paragraphs on that page, 164, says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you charge the road of happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then. I want to thank you all one more time. Thank you.